Ladies and gentlemen, the next voice you will hear will be that of Fred Allen in person.
And good evening. Say, Jimmy, yes. What was that digest introduction there? What about my build-up? What am I, suddenly a spot announcement or something? Why, Bulova gives the time a better send-off than that. What is the big idea?
Well, look, Fred, the first thing an announcer learns in radio is never to give a big build-up to something that isn't going to follow through.
Mr. Wallington, don't mug, just read the thing. You have friends in the audience. You can talk to them during the commercial. Mr. Wallington, are you hinting that tonight's program is a potential blitzer?
Well, all I know is that I was at rehearsal. Nothing made me laugh.
It didn't?
No. You know, Fred, I am known as Jimmy, it takes a good one to make me laugh, Wallington.
Well, I only wish you were more like Don Anything Goes Wilson. You know, Benny shows feathers in his underwear every Sunday night. The guy. Well, I my luck, I got a pessimist for an announcer. What am I going to do? Hello, Kenny.
Hello, Mr.
Better late than never. I thought you'd be going through on the 12-4. You're coming through at 12. Well, you're just in time, Kenny, it says here. You were at rehearsal today after this little trouble with Mr. Wallington, and it takes a good one to make me laugh, Wallington. You were at rehearsal. Now, what do you think of our program?
Oh, it's all right, I guess.
Well, only all right, Kenny. You don't think it's convulsing?
Well, I don't think that joke I have on page 14 is funny.
Which one?
Well, the one where you say to me, "Did you see Betty Davis in the letter?"
Yeah.
And I say, "No, I didn't shake out the envelope."
Why, what's wrong with it, Kenny? Why, that joke is as hot as a fireman's destination. Why, the script is loaded with these as you get along, page after page. I hope not. Now, look, I listened at rehearsal. I was tied up directing the band, you know. Goodman is only a figurehead here. I was conducting. And I distinctly remember some lusty abdominal guffaws.
You mean when Mr. Goodman fell into the orchestra pit?
Yeah. That was a riotous moment.
The orchestra didn't laugh.
Why not?
No blood.
Well, now that Kenny has brought this brief episode to a hilarious, albeit messy close, I must watch those big words coming one on top of the other there. We turn to the latest news of the week. The Texaco News presents One Highlight from the World of News. New Haven, Connecticut, Columbus, Ohio, Evanston, Illinois, and all stadiums east and west. As the final whistle blew on gridirons throughout the country last Saturday, the curtain descended on college football for 1940. Tonight, the Texaco News brings you the high and low lights that studded the hectic football season that has just come to a close. First, a prominent educator who ignored the game entirely this year, Professor Emeritus Quince. Now, Professor Quince, about football...
Football, bah!
What do you mean, football, bah?
What is football? 22 adolescents in the process of being educated, committing group mayhem to retain possession of 1 cubic foot of wind encased in the epidermis of a swine. It ought to be abolished.
Well, if you abolish football, Professor, what sport would replace it?
Logarithms.
Logarithms?
Yes.
Well, how could you play logarithms?
The same as football, except the center, instead of passing a ball, would pass a logarithm.
Yeah.
The backfield would carry a roll-top desk.
The three men in the backfield with the roll-top desk,
yes.
I see.
Now the whistle blows.
Yeah.
The center snaps back the logarithm. Both teams huddle around the desk.
Yeah.
The first team to work out the logarithm gets 6 points. The crowd cheers. The band plays, "I got a logarithm, I got a logarithm."
Professor, have you ever caught yourself talking to a pistachio?
Do you think I'm a nut?
I certainly do, and I'm generally right, and thank you, Professor Emeritus Quince. A young lady football fan who didn't miss a single football game all season is Miss Sunny Trite. You saw all the college games, Sunny?
Yeah, Everybody calls me Sugar.
Sugar? Why?
Because I'm always in the bowl.
Oh. You know all of the football players, do you?
Name any college and I'll show you the fullback's class pin.
Really?
I've been going out with college boys since I was knee-high to a raccoon.
You don't say.
I got their numbers, brother.
Well, how do you mean?
Well, for instance, there's the studious college boy.
Yeah?
He'll read you like a book.
Yes?
Then there are the college bridge player. He's all hands.
Uh-huh.
And the college baseball player. He'll pitch a little woe.
I see. And which type of college boy do you prefer?
Well, for the last 2 years, I've been concentrating on football players only.
Why?
Well, I ain't getting no younger.
Well, no.
And the way it looks to me, I'm a cinch to end up in the old maid's home.
And you're going to football games so that when you're sitting there in the old maid's home...
I'll have more passes to remember than any other old maid in the journey.
Thank you, Miss Sunny Trout. And now a little-known player who has just completed a hard season on the gridiron, Bull Morrow. How long have you been playing football, Bull?
I've been playing college football 20 years.
You've been going to college for 20 years?
Yeah. I was a freshman in one college for 4 years.
Really?
Yeah. When I left, I was a senior freshman.
Well, I guess you can go way back in college football, Bull.
Yeah. I played against the Navy when John Paul Jones was at tackle.
Don't say.
Yeah. I played against the Army when Pershing was their quarterback.
Fancy that.
Yeah, Pershing played quarterback on a horse.
Really?
After you tackled a horse, you had to tackle Pershing.
Well, tell me, Bull, confidentially, did you have a good season this year?
Well, we only lost one game, 6-0.
Well, how did that happen?
Well, their fullback got in the clear. I could have nailed him, but I turned the other way on purpose.
Why?
I didn't have the heart to tackle my own son.
Well, would you say a fellow can play college football all his life?
Well, if he's got a specialty, he can. Like me. I got a specialty. That's what keeps me going.
What is your specialty, Bull?
Running around me own end.
You run around your own end?
I've been running around my own end for years.
Well, doesn't the view get rather monotonous?
Yeah, it does, but it's a living and I'm out in the open.
Oh. Say, by the way, Bull, what college did you play for this year?
The letter's right here in me sweater.
What is it?
I don't know. I can't read neither, bud.
Thank you, Bull Morrow. And now two oddities that went unnoticed during the college gridiron year. The man who had the least to do during the 1940 season was Thurber Quint. How many games did you participate in, Thurber?
I worked in 8 games and I didn't do nothing.
You don't say.
Through 3 of the games, I slept.
Yes?
In 2 other games, I was put out of the stadium for loitering.
Yeah?
Last Saturday, I was pinched during a game for vagrancy.
Well, I don't...
They hired me to work, and then they don't give me nothing to do.
Well, if you slept through 3 games, were ejected for loitering and arrested for vagrancy, what were you supposed to be doing at these games all season?
I was keeping score for Yale.
A mythical task you
for
had.
For Yale and me both. We got plenty of nothing.
The outstanding innovation of the past football year was the attempt by a Harvard senior to make cheering more literate. As a Harvard man, T.J. Smythe III, aptly puts it,
football cheers today blend the cadence of the jungle with the jargon of the gutter.
You mean they don't make sense?
My point exactly. Rickety Exco Exco X, for example, now what is that? A surrealist grouping of vowels and consonants utterly devoid of meaning.
Well, how did you attempt to revolutionize cheering, Mr. Smythe?
At Harvard, we endeavored to clarify the cheer as it progressed.
Well, can you demonstrate this new Harvard method?
Yes, I've brought a few Harvard chaps along. We'll root one out for you.
You're going to root one out, boys?
Yes.
Well, fine.
Ready, chap?
Ready, smart.
Well, all right. All right, now let's hear the new Harvard clarified and self-explanatory cheer.
Sis, a sibilant byproduct of hissing. Boo, a hollow report emanating from a drum. Ba, the bleat of a sheep at bay. Sis, as before. Boom, previously defined. Ba, ditto. Are we in it? Most assuredly we are. Have it, rah, a contraction of hurrah, repeated three times. To wit, rah, rah, rah.
Well, now, ladies and gentlemen, Kenny Baker, who won his letter in a raffle at the post office, sings Only Forever. Thank you, Kenny, and good luck on your opening with Unit 37 tomorrow, Kenny. Hey, is Larry Elliott around? Oh, there you are, Larry. Say, Larry, I want to congratulate you.
Congratulate me? What for, Fred?
For what you've done for a friend of mine, a former miser.
But I haven't done anything.
Oh, yes, you haven't. We both got the same script. Let me...
The suit's out.
Well, I know. That threw you off, leaving something out. Eh? Well, say, you haven't done anything. That's your line. I'll read it over. You can see how it should have been done. Yes, you have done something, Larry. This miser used to be so tight that when he got his hands on a penny, he'd squeeze it until Lincoln's beard was a Van Dyke. But today, this miserly chap is a changed man, and thanks to you, L. Elliot.
But I don't get it, Fred. What did I do?
Well, my friend heard you talking about Sky Chief, Larry, and he abandoned all of his old miserly habits. Today, he buys Sky Chief for his car. Thanks to you, he has gone from motoring parsimony to extravagance.
But, wait a minute, Fred. Using Sky Chief is not an extravagance.
Using Sky Chief is not an extravagance?
It's not an extravagance.
Well, it's called the luxury gasoline, isn't it?
True enough, Fred. Motorists do know Texaco Sky Chief as the luxury gasoline, but that has nothing to do with the price. For Sky Chief costs no more than other premium fuels. Luxury merely describes Sky Chief's performance, the thrill of flying starts, zooming pickup, the satisfaction of having smooth, soaring power.
Maestro Al Goodman and his Marfac Lubricating Orchestra have just completed two guitars. And now, ladies and gentlemen...
Hello, Mr. Allen.
Oh, hello, Portland. Did you hear Mr. Goodman's Haviland Hillbillies playing two guitars?
Yes. Mr. Goodman is wonderful. He should be conducting at Carnegie Hall.
Well, I know. His relatives have been saying that for years. Isn't it funny you should hit upon it, too? Mm-hmm. But I'm so afraid Mr. Goodman is doomed never to be a symphony conductor.
Why?
From the back, he doesn't look good in a rented dress suit.
Well, Mama wants to buy some of Mr. Goodman's records.
Well, any music lovers who may be interested in buying Mr. Goodman's recordings, of course, can get them only from Al's brother-in-law, who is selling the records on 42nd Street.
On 42nd Street where?
Well, you pass the flea circus next to that hamburger Alicia on the... It's the second doorway on the right. You step over the little old lady who's selling racing forms. Go down the hall, and Al's brother-in-law is next to a fat man with no shirt on who's making book. You light a match, and his brother is right behind this fat guy. He's give you 8-7 on a 2-1, sir.
He isn't there anymore.
Oh, did you say something, Mr. Goodman?
Yes. My brother-in-law isn't there anymore. He moved.
Well, Portland wants to buy some of your records, Maestro. Now, where can she find your brother-in-law?
At the new location.
Well, I know, but where is your brother-in-law's new location?
You know the auction room on 44th Street?
Yes.
You go in there.
In the auction room? Yes.
The auctioneer will put up a cheap article.
Yeah?
You keep bidding on it. The article will finally be sold to you.
Yes.
And when you step to the back of the auction room to get the article, which is now your property...
Yeah?
A man will be wrapping it up.
Well, naturally.
Next to him will be another fellow handing him the string.
That's your brother-in-law?
That's my brother.
Oh. Well, when I find your brother...
Ask him where my brother-in-law is.
Oh. Forget about the records, Portland. I've got my eye on an old melodeon from the Greeley Square. It was buried in the pit there years ago. I'll get it for you and give it to you later. Say, who is our guest tonight?
Well, you said last week that every place you go in New York, people are dancing.
Oh, and how true I was and didn't know it at the time. You know that every other building on Broadway today seems to be a dance hall. Roseland, Honeymoon Haven, all the nightclubs. Chin Lee's has a dance floor.
Oh, I hear they even have dancing in the automat.
Yes, they just opened a special slot there. If you want to dance, you drop a nickel in. The chef whistles Blueberry Hill through the slot. And you dance. Now, what I would like to know is... where does everybody learn to do this dancing?
Oh, I think our guest can tell you.
Our guest tonight is a dance hall owner?
No. This young lady is a teacher from America's leading ballroom dancing school.
Arthur Murray's?
That's right. Mr. Allen, meet Miss Ruth Hopkins.
Well, good evening.
Good evening, Mr. Allen.
Your pupils are out in force tonight, aren't they? Pardon?
I hope so.
Oh, thank you. Ad-libbing at your second appearance at the microphone. Congratulations. You're doing a whale of a job, Miss Hopkins. Now, you are a tutor of terpsichore, Miss Hopkins.
I am a dancing teacher. Yes, Mr. Allen.
But you look so young to have mastered the rigadoon and fling. How long have you been instructing?
Ever since I finished at college 5 years ago.
Well, did you go to college here in New York?
Yes, I got my B.A. at Hunter.
Well, how did you happen to go from campus to Congress?
It was very simple, really. After graduation, I saw an ad for teachers at the Arthur Murray School. I was engaged, and I've been there ever since.
Your B.A. turned out to stand for Big Apple, didn't it? Well, what dances did you have to master before you could instruct?
Oh, the foxtrot, waltz, tango, and the modern dances like the rumba and the conga.
May I ask, what method of instruction you employ? Do you teach classes, or do you isolate the minuet apprentice?
All of our students receive individual instruction.
Well, what do you use for music? Mr. Murray doesn't rent one-man bands from the major for each couple, surely.
No, Mr. Allen, we use Victrola music.
And there's a cheap dance hall over here where they have a man who gets shortwave programs on his bridge work, and he... done away with the Victrola. Well, tell me, programs... Oh, you ought to see the steps they do to static when those shortwave programs... how many programs will you have a day, Miss Hopkins?
I average about...
Oh, now, wait. Now, let us be serious. No laughing matters. How many pupils will you have a day?
I average about 5. On a busy day, I may give 8 lessons.
8 lessons. You see, Madame Zonger, and raise her, too. Well, I didn't recognize the madam in fine print there. Well, I know that Mr. Murray has geared up his mazurka mill for mass production. And how many teachers does his school employ?
We have 110 girls instructing and 90 men teachers for the women students.
Gosh, with 200 teachers giving 6 or more lessons daily, Mr. Murray has a bustling business consisting of little holding companies, hasn't he?
Outside of New York, there are 30 or 40 other Arthur Murray schools throughout the country.
Mr. Murray has finance in his dance, all right. Well, just how does... that joke is on its last legs. We gave her another chance for this. Ants are out of everything from now on. Say, how does an Arthur Murray course work out? Now, let's say that I enroll, Miss Hopkins, and you are my teacher.
Well, the first thing I would teach you, Mr. Allen, is how to walk.
Oh, Miss Hopkins. Well, after all, I'm not creeping around here on all...
I mean, you'd have to learn to take graceful, rhythmic steps and correct your posture.
Well, let me explain, please. My posture normally isn't this bad, Miss Hopkins, but tonight, through an unfortunate accident, I have on a pair of cheap suspenders. Now, the suspenders won't give, so my spine has to. Well, getting back to my lessons, after I learned to walk...
I'd teach you a number of simple foxtrot steps.
Yeah?
After that, we'd spend some time on the waltz.
Well, how long would it be before I could walk brazenly into Roseland and be the talk of the wallflowers?
With diligent application, I'm sure you would dance very well in 3 months.
Oh, I doubt it, Miss Hopkins. From the dancing I've seen in the aisles at the Paramount... Some of the, I'm afraid this new technique is too much for an old turkey trotter and a Peabody prancer like myself.
I think you'd make a wonderful dancer, Mr. Allen.
Oh, well, I might be all right for Adagio work. I could probably catch one of those girls they throw around on the first bounce. That would count. But I'm sure I couldn't cut a rug if I was dancing with skates on. But tell me, now, do you have many celebrities enroll as freshmen at your Fandango Forum?
Yes, we've taught many famous executives, writers, and professional men. At one time, we even had a senator as a pupil.
So that's what they do. But tell me, Miss Hopkins, how do you keep up with new dancers? Now, suppose a new rhythmic caper, the Canarsie Creep. An old Brooklyn folk dance. Suppose this old folk dance starts sweeping the land. Now, how do you manage to get it red hot and teach it to your pupils?
Well, Mr. Murray attends to that. He holds special classes for the teachers. And we are taught the latest dances as soon as they become popular.
Say, you can give a lesson or you can take it. Well, Miss Hopkins, I must confess that you have awakened the nymph in me. I'm 90% fawn, you know. The latest Gallup rating. I went up to the zoo especially for it. But I think I shall enroll with you for a course in dancing instruction.
I shall be happy to streamline your Peabody and Turkey Trot, Mr. Allen.
Well, so nice of you. If you could only... finish my Texas Tommy while you're at it. Well, what modern dances do you guarantee? Texas Tommy was a famous dance before Goodman was...
I'll teach you to waltz, foxtrot, rumba.
Oh, I had better forego the rumba, Miss Hopkins.
Why?
Well, at the moment, our country is enjoying friendly relations with South America. Now, if any Latin American ambassador ever catches me doing a rumba, there's going to be a diplomatic crisis on the spot. As the boys say down Washington way, Miss Hopkins, there will be hull to pay.
Good night,
and thank you for sitting here. Ladies and gentlemen, the Martins sing one of the songs from the new Paramount picture, Love Thy Neighbor, starring Mary Martin, Rochester, and Fred Allen. The song, Dearest, Dearest I. Tonight we are honored in presenting as a special guest one of the country's most unique hobbyists, Mr. Agnew Crunch. Just what is your hobby again, Mr. Crunch?
My hobby is writing down in this album... remarks made by various people on the subject of weather.
Well, it sounds fascinatingly dull, I must say. What are some of your collected fragments of weather chit-chat, Ag?
Well, here is a remark made by a man named Jones on the evening of December 3, 1907. Quote, it looks like rain, kinda, unquote.
Say, that is as neat a bit of tritery as I have ever heard.
Well, I've got some that are even better. Listen to this one. Quote, ugh, muckamuckchuck, ugh, unquote.
That is a remark about the weather?
Yes, it was made by a rain in the face during a snowstorm.
You don't say. Well, tell me, Agnew, what do you consider your most significant bit of weather conversation? I mean, the gem of your entire collection.
Oh, that is a remark that was made by a man on this very program.
Really?
Your Mr. Wellington was saying it backstage a moment ago.
Oh, we'll be get a medal from Radio Guide, I bet, before this is through. Our own Jimmy. Why, there's an honor. Say, Jimmy, what was this brilliant bit of talk you dropped about the weather?
Well, I said this. If you put off getting your car ready for winter weather, the time's growing short. So see your Texaco dealer now and avoid needless trouble, bother, and...
What? We're leaving for Old Orchard with you.
Well, folks, I've got bad news for you this evening, you all. My picture ain't a-going to premiere at Old Orchard, you
all. So what's the difference? We're packed, we'll go to Waukegan.
Well, fortunately, it isn't going there either. The picture is going to open right here in New York City.
Did Mr. Benny decide that, Mr. Allen, or did you?
No, the publicity department decided, Portland. You know how they do with pictures. They take them where they mean something to the neighbor. You know, like, if the picture's northwest mounted, they go way up in Canada, up in some Medicine Hat with it. And if it's Brigham Young, they open a picture like that, say, at Salt Lake.
I see.
Well, that's the thing. Now, the publicity department started looking at Love Thy Neighbor to find an excuse to open at someplace, you see. Well, they looked all through the picture, and they finally found a little scene where a man is eating an orange. And on the strength of that orange, they were going to open the picture in Florida.
And what happened?
Well, sir, if the research department didn't step in and find out that the orange the little man was eating was a California orange. So, of course, Florida was finished right there. Well, Paramount went back, looked through the picture again, and finally decided to open Love Thy Neighbor in New York.
Why?
They found a yellow cab in the picture. Everything settled just as Benny was running out of jokes.
Jack had plenty of jokes last Sunday.
At what price jokes? Don Wilson has to get married so that Benny can get material for a program. How Don can afford it is too much for me.
Oh, two can live as cheaply as one.
Not on what Benny pays one. I'm expecting Pellegra to break out on that program any week. What a feeny. Benny is so tight he has to butter his lips to skin his teeth.
Oh, you ought to stop fighting with Jack, Mr. Allen.
Well, I will.
When?
When the white stuff stops sizzling when it meets the blue stuff in a settler's powder.
Why don't you two just shake hands?
Yeah, I wouldn't shake hands with that guy. Did you ever feel that limp, lifeless covey of digits that hang on Benny? The one time I shook Benny's hand, I thought it was putty. I tried to lump it and push it back up his sleeve again.
Well, why don't you start a feud with somebody on this program? Instead of building up Jack, you can build up one of our people.
Oh, that's fine. Who can I insult on this program?
You can insult me.
Well, all right. Now you might have something there. I'll try it out. See here, Portland. That dress you have on looks like something that was gotten out of a silkworm with a zucchini. I've seen better-looking garments thrown over a birdcage in the home of a middle-class family at night.
Oh, yes? Is that a suit you have on, or are you dancing with someone?
And what about your hairdo? Is that a snood you have on, or has your papoose slipped up?
I wouldn't say that if I were you, buddy.
Who wouldn't say what?
I, Goodman, wouldn't say it.
You, Goodman, are not saying it. I, Allen, am saying it.
In the presence of Goodman, no lady is insulted.
What happens in the presence of Goodman if a lady is insulted?
Goodman leaves the room.
I'm insulting.
I'm leaving.
All right, Olson. That settles it, Johnson. Hey, he might be another Olson and Johnson, the way it's working out there.
Oh, it's all right, Mr. Goodman.
Sure. We're just auditioning a feud.
A feud? That reminds me, I'm hungry.
Oh, now, wait. If you're hungry, Mr. Goodman, you can follow that trail of corn you just left and peck your way back to the bandstand.
I'm corny, and he's growing.
Oh, go away. Go away, Ole.
That's an idea, Mr. Allen. You can start a feud with Mr. Goodman.
How can you insult a man whose idea of snappy repartee is sticking his tongue out at you? You see, there's nobody on this program, Portland, that I can really fight with.
What about Kenny?
Oh, Kenny, with that Boy Scout outlook? Oh, well, how can I get Kenny mad?
Call him names, Mr. Allen. It's a natural feud.
Well, I'll try it. I'll wait till I get him over here. Say, Crumb.
Did you call me F.A.?
Yes, I called you Crumb.
Crumb? Say, that's good. Last week I was a nutnik, this week I'm a crumb. Boy, I'm going places on this program.
Oh, Portland, look at those trusting eyes. I can't go through with it.
But you've got to start a feud, Mr. Allen.
Well, I guess Kenny's my last hope. Say, Kenny, have you ever taken a good look at your teeth?
Yes, Mr. Allen.
Did it ever occur to you that when you open your mouth, you look as though you're masticating a mahjong set?
Yeah. Revolting, isn't it?
Kenny, are you going to take that? Aren't you going to do something about it?
You bet, Porty. Next week, I'll wear a muzzle.
Oh, it's not.
Keep it up. Try some more, Mr.
Well, I can't get Kenny mad. You
say something dirty about his singing. That with tenors is murder.
Say, now, that is not only a well-read line, that is an idea. That with tenors is murder. Well, Kenny, last week I heard you sing Genie with the Light Brown Hair, and your voice had more cracks in it than the linoleum on a... Well, it's imitation stuff. There's no name for it. I'm just trying to get there. Well, on a flophouse floor. That concludes the sentence, ladies and gentlemen. Ta-ta!
You think that's something? Will you hear me louse up ferryboat serenade tonight?
Good, didn't I? Well, this whole thing is a waste. Well, let's go back and do it tomorrow. Kenny's got a whale of a laugh. Let's try that out. I heard you sing Genie with the Light Brown Hair, and your voice had more cracks in it than the linoleum on a flophouse floor.
You think that's something? Will you hear me louse up ferryboat serenade tonight?
Oh, this whole thing is a waste of time.
Kenny, are you a man or a mouse?
A man. But tell me if you see a cat coming.
Look, Kenny. Look, Kenny, give it to him back, but good.
Take a good look at Mr. Allen, Kenny.
Yes, his face, his suit.
You'll think of something mean to say back then, Kenny. Look at him.
I'm looking.
Now say something.
You think I should?
Sure, go right ahead.
Mr. Allen?
Yes, Kenny.
Gee, you're lovely.
Kenneth, I apologize. I've been an evil, risky-thinking old man, trying to change your warm disposition. All I can say is that this world is a better place to live in as long as there are sweet youngsters rampant like you and Dennis Day.
What's so sweet about Dennis Day?
Kenny, was that you?
And what's so young about Dennis Day?
Well, Kenny...
He's 50 if he's a day.
Well, he's a day.
All right, he's 50 if he's a dentist then.
Now, you said enough, Kenny. You better sing your number.
Well, why don't you hire Dennis Day?
Now, Kenny...
He'll jump at $8 a week. You'll save $2.
Gentlemen, if Mr. Goodman can find his place, Kenny Baker will now sing Ferryboat...
$6 a week and a box of Cracker Jacks, and he'll run errands for you.
Get going, Goodman.
Say, if he's a comedian, I'm a singer. Who said that?
I have never been aboard a steamer. I am just content to be...
Could you spare just a few seconds? There's a news photographer here to take the picture.
Well, I'm sorry. Not right in the middle of the program, Jimmy.
But that's what this man wants, Fred. An action shot.
Yes, Mr. Allen. A comedian at work. Now, if you'll just hold your mouth open as if you were saying something excruciatingly funny...
Now, look, Fred, you can't take a picture here in this light. The light is...
Oh, goodness. Can't you see I've got a flash bulb on my camera? Now, open the mouth a little wider, please.
Listen, if I open it any wider, Mayor LaGuardia will probably drive up here and dedicate it for a new tunnel. Bob, set off your flash bulb and get it over.
All right, Mr. Allen. Here it comes. Oh, tut.
Well, what happened? Your flash bulb didn't go off, did it?
How embarrassing. That bulb was a dud.
A dud?
Am I the one? Imagine me putting a dud bulb in my flash gun. I must be slipping.
Well, don't worry about it, friend. I put that dud in your camera.
You, Mr. Wallington? Is this sabotage?
No. Let's call it a demonstration. I wanted to show our audience that when a news cameraman presses the button of his flash gun and the flash bulb doesn't go off, it's a dud. And it's not far-fetched to speak of duds in gasoline either. The gasoline vapor that fires in your cylinders is a combination of many elements. All these elements should burn completely the instant the spark flashes. Those that don't are duds. Duds that steal power from your motor. Texaco Refining removes these duds.
Ladies and gentlemen, the Texaco Workshop players. Tonight they present a saga of big business called The Great Department Store Dilemma, or The Customer Wasn't a Midget, but they shortchanged him just the same. Music?
Department stores.
Robbing nerve centers of the modern metropolis.
Department stores.
Mammoth merchandising marts where mankind's every want has been anticipated.
Department stores.
Where 1,000 real-life dramas are enacted every day. On each bustling floor of the great R.H. Allen department store, where our story takes place, bedlam reigns from 9 to 5. The air is fraught with hubbub.
Oh, Lord,
what
have we... Going up.
Bargain. Bargain.
Lingerie. Yes, lady.
Going down. Going
down. Underwear.
2 hours over.
Going down.
Underwear.
Going up.
Going up.
Going down.
While decibel chaos rages in every department of the mighty R.H. Allen store, the tycoon who controls the destinies of this mastodonic enterprise races through his working day, ever mindful of the battle cry of big business, efficiency. We find R.H. Allen, the dynamic jerk, just entering his private office.
Good morning, Miss Fitt.
Good morning, Mr. Allen.
Call me R.H., Miss Fitt. It will save time. Time is money in the department store game. We have got to be efficient, Miss Fitt.
Yes, sir.
Take a memo. All floor walkers will report for shoe and spat test immediately. Any floor walker caught with squeaky shoes will be asked to turn in his gardenia and leave. Have you got that?
Yes, sir.
Good. Make 6 copies on Kleenex. Kleenex memos can be used as hand towels later. That is efficiency, Miss Fitt, and efficiency is the keynote of our business.
But this store has been losing money for 10 years.
I know. We may be facing bankruptcy, but we'll collapse efficiently.
That reminds me. They phoned again this morning.
The receivers?
Yes. They reversed the charges.
Gad, they're trying to push me over the brink. Every nickel counts today, Miss Fitt.
Eureka, R.H.
Weems, my head bookkeeper.
They balance, R.H. They balance.
What balances, Weems?
Your books. Today ends our fiscal year.
Well?
After losing money for 10 straight years, this year...
R.H. Allen shows a profit.
No, you just came out even. So long.
Did you hear that, Miss Fitz? For the first time in 10 years, we've broken even. I've been looking at red ink so long, my eyes are permanently bloodshot. What is my next appointment there?
There's a man outside with a complaint.
Well, he won't be lonesome then, will he? Well, now let me see. I feel like a bit of troubleshooting. Show him in.
Yes, sir. All right, we'll see you, sir.
Hello.
Oh, yes?
Do you owe me 13 cents?
Now, just a minute. Just a minute, please.
Do you owe me 13 cents?
I heard you the first time.
Then why didn't you pay me?
Efficiency is the rule at R.H. Allen, sir. Before a refund is even considered, your complaint form must be filled out, sir. Now, I'll fill it out here. Your name?
Lorenzo Fritter.
Lorenzo Fritter. Address?
Dingley Dell Trailer Camp, Westchester.
Nature of complaint?
You owe me 13 cents.
Now, wait a minute. That is hearsay. What we want the details.
I bought 7 egg cups here. You only delivered me 6. You gotta give me 13 cents.
This isn't the pot of gold, Mr. Fritter. You are dealing with the R.H. Allen Company, the home of efficiency.
Uh-huh.
Now, if a mistake has been made, mark you, you have made it.
Here.
Take this slip.
Yeah.
Take this slip to the credit department.
The credit department.
They'll give you a slip there to the bookkeeping department.
You'll
get a slip there for the small claims bureau.
Yeah, the small claims.
They'll give you a slip to petty cash.
Yeah, petty
and they will receive a slip to the teller.
Yeah, the teller.
The teller will tell you...
What?
The teller will tell you where you can go. Now, here is your slip. Good day.
Now, look. It ain't the principle of the thing.
I know. It's the 13 cents.
Yeah. The trouble I go through for 13 cents...
Couldn't you just give him the 13 cents, R.H., and get rid of him?
Give him the Do you realize what 13 cents means at this time, Miss Fitt? Why, after 10 years, the R.H. Allen books finally balance. 13 cents means a deficit. A deficit means receivership. What is that?
Elevator operator 57 is waiting.
Oh, yes. He's up on charges. Show him in here.
Yes, sir. Come and get it, 57.
Thank you, miss.
You sent for me, R.H.?
Yes, 57. Serious charges have been brought against you. My elevator Gestapo, operating in well 2, reports that when you announce the articles for sale at each floor, 57, you can actually be understood.
Oh, no, sir. It is not true. I swear it is not.
We shall soon see, 57. I'm putting you to the test.
Yes, sir. I will vindicate myself. You will see.
No blustering, 57. Now, pretend you are in an elevator. You are dry. You're arriving at the third floor. What is it you say?
Third floor, Nimitz Square, double stuff, and give a bottle of sound, and gloves, blah, blah, blah.
57. The word gloves filtered through. I distinctly heard it.
Well, I am sorry, sir. It must have been a slip of the tongue.
Well, I'll give you one more chance, 57. Now, you arrive, say, at the fourth floor. Carry on.
Yes, sir. Fourth floor, Charles Wynn, order from bus, from bank, from cameras, telephone.
Stop. That word camera came through clear as a bell. Now, is that being efficient, 57?
Well, clarity is my weakness, sir. My mother was frightened by Milton Cross.
Heredity is no excuse in big business, 57. Miss Fitt, buzz for Mr. Riggs.
Yes, sir.
Oh, Riggs is not replacing me, sir.
No, 57. Riggs will take you in hand for the time. Ah, come in, Riggs. 57, Riggs here will tutor you in diction. Riggs is the greatest exponent of incomprehensibility in America. Riggs has been talking for 20 years, and no one yet has ever understood a word he has said. Riggs, meet your new pupil, 57. Get to work, boy. Gad, how can a department store be efficient if its elevator men are comprehensible?
You mean they've got to talk garbled?
Why, if shoppers can understand elevator men, they'll go right to the department they want. Why, they'll make their purchases and leave the store. But if shoppers are confused, they'll wander around for hours buying other things. Now, if I can...
What about my 13th shirt?
Now, Mr. Fritter...
What am I getting here, a rookin?
Dear Mr. Fritter...
Don't give me that, my dear Mr. Fritter. I'm missing an egg cup. Do you owe me 13 cents?
Did you check at the credit department?
Yes.
Did you go to the bookkeeping department?
Yes.
The small claims bureau?
Yes.
The teller?
Yes.
And what did the teller tell you?
Do you owe me 13 cents?
Yes. Clean this up once and for all. Miss Fitt, buzz for Felton, our vice president in charge of egg cup bundling.
Yes, sir.
No reveille on the buzzer, please.
Either I get that egg cup run to get my 13
cents. Now, see here. You can't bully an efficient organization, Fritter.
No, you
buzzed, R.H.
Yes, Felton. This customer, Fritter, claims he purchased 7 egg cups here.
And I was only delivered 6.
Quiet, Fritter, please.
I recall the Fritter sale, R.H.
Good. Now, as vice president in charge of egg cup bundling, Felton, I order you to acquaint this imbecile with the fact that he is wrong.
I'm afraid I can't, sir.
Felton, there is an egg cup missing?
Yes. I took it, sir.
Felton, you...
It was an emergency, sir. A bit of wax from my artificial gardenia somehow got into my eye. I was blinded. I was reeling around the bundle counter in extreme pain. I was crying little Dixie cups.
Felton, you...
I had to purge my eye. I had no eye cup.
No eye cup, and you took an egg cup from Mr. Fritter's order?
To swash my eye, sir. I intended to put it back when I returned. The vice president in charge of twine had consummated the bundle, sir. It was on its way to the Dingley Dell trailer camp.
You owe me 13 cents.
R.H. Allen will make restitution, Fritter. Where is that missing egg cup, Felton?
I smashed it. Everything went black. I had to conceal my cry.
Now quit stalling, Allen. Give me the 13 cents.
I can't give you the 13 cents. Felton, give Fritter here a duplicate egg cup out of stock.
But there are no more, sir. Mr. Fritter brought the last of a broken Oriental lot.
Dad, what a calamity.
Wait a minute. Do I get a lawyer or do you give me the 13 cents?
You're asking the impossible, Fritter.
Now, what's so impossible? Just give me the 13 cents.
But you don't understand, Mr. Fritter. For 10 years, this store has been losing money. Receivers have been circling around and around, ready to swoop.
Uh-huh.
Today, for the first time, my books balance. My business is breaking even.
So what?
If I give you the 13 cents, R.H. Allen would show a deficit. It means bankruptcy, collapse, ruined.
That don't mean nothing to me. I got 13 cents.
Now, don't. Please, don't press your claim, Mr. Fritter. I'll do anything. I'll even step down. I'll make you the president of this company.
The president?
Yes, Mr. Fritter. You are now the president of the great R.H. Allen Company. I'll leave. Here, take my desk.
So, this desk belongs to me? The blotters, this aspirin, everything?
Not everything, Mr. Fritter.
No.
In the top drawer of that desk, I have some personal property. Those things belong to me.
What things?
There are 5 2-cent stamps and 3 postcards.
So what? You owe me 13 cents.
Today and tomorrow from Larry Elliott.
Long before the days of the automobile, Americans gave the name station to the place.